How's everybody? Trying to think of something to say. Everybody doing all right? Good. Awesome. Wonderful. For those of you, I think everybody knows me. Does anybody not know me? Okay, good. Excellent. We're making our way through the Bible. We've gotten up to 1 Kings, stories of Elijah. We didn't finish last time, so we're going to pick up where we ended. And so this is what I want to do, have a word of prayer, sort of review some of the things. I'm going to try not to spend so much time reviewing today, but sort of review a little bit about what we talked about last week. Read some Bible, and then go out and do something important. Sound good? Beautiful. Excellent. So the Lord be with you. Let us pray. Blessed Lord, who has caused all scriptures to be written for our instruction, teach us so to hear them, to read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest them, so that we may embrace and ever hold fast the blessed hope of everlasting life, which you have given to us through our Lord Jesus Christ, to whom with you and the Holy Spirit be all honor and glory, world without end. Amen. Beautiful. So one of the things we talked about last week is Deuteronomy. We're in 1 Kings, but we talked about Deuteronomy. Well, of course we talked about Deuteronomy, because every time we come to church, we should talk about Deuteronomy, because it is the most important book in the Bible. I can tell you that there would be no New Testament if it weren't for Deuteronomy. The way in which Deuteronomy sees things, the way in which Deuteronomy understands God, the way in which Deuteronomy understands humanity, the way in which Deuteronomy understands sin, the way in which Deuteronomy understands the commandments, the way in which Deuteronomy understands the relationship between all of those things is exactly the way in which Jesus understood it. I mean, exactly the way in which Jesus understood it, the way in which Paul understood it, and the way in which practically every writer of the New Testament understood it. If I were to take all of Deuteronomy and put it in a saucepan and put it on the stove and put it on heat and have it boil until finally it reduced down, this is what Deuteronomy says. You should love. You should love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. And you should keep that focus. You should keep that devotion. You should keep that center before your eyes all the time. There is no situation that will not be helped by not, if you would just, keep that as the center of your being. And you have a brain like Swiss cheese. You let things fall out of it all the time. You forget stuff. It's tough. I can't find my car keys half the time, right? And so what you need to do is to focus. I mean, like, actively focus on the love of God. And if you keep that as your singular, devoted center of your life. Footnote. That does not mean that nothing bad will ever happen to you. We're not talking about magic. We're not talking about amulets. We're not talking about magic spells. But if you keep that as the center of your life, your life will be better than it would be otherwise. If you split your attention between 20 bazillion different things and you don't have a center and you're just sort of going here and there and there's not any, center. That's what Deuteronomy teaches, and it seems to me that's exactly what Jesus, right? The lawyer comes to Jesus. Remember this? The lawyer comes to Jesus and says, what's the greatest commandment? And what does Jesus say? Deuteronomy, right? Right? Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and everything else is going to be taken care of, right? Right. So Paul in 1 Corinthians, right? Chapter 13, what's the most important thing? Love. Love, 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 love. Love of God, love of others. And when I say love of God and love of others, it's the same thing. You can't have one without the other. It's the same. It's two sides of the same coin. So that's Deuteronomy. We talked a little bit about prophets, right? According to Deuteronomy. And whatever prophets are about, according to Deuteronomy, is this. Helping people focus, right? Again, it's not a particularly hard book to understand. If you get the central point, it doesn't really matter what the question is, that's going to be the answer. So what prophets do is that they help people focus on the love of God, the devotion for God, the single-minded devotion toward God. And then we saw Elijah last week. You remember Elijah? You remember him? Yeah. He's complicated. He's a complicated figure. He sort of speaks up at the very beginning saying that there's going to be this drought. And there's going to be a drought on the land. And in fact, the one that's bringing the drought is Elijah is going to bring a drought. And in fact, that drought is going to end when Elijah says so. And how long is that drought going to last? Have no idea. But Elijah will tell you when it's going to end. I'm not quite sure how that centers people up into the single-minded devotion to God. But anyway, through various types of things, he meets a widow. God says he's going to command a widow to take care of him in the midst of this drought. He meets the widow. He says, bring me a little water. Get to it, right? Bring me a little water. She says, okay, bring me a little food. Oh, I can't do that. I don't have anything. I just have like a little bit of flour. And what I'm going to do, I already have a plan. What I'm going to do is I'm going to gather a few sticks, I'm going to make a fire. I'm going to cook this flour into a cake, right? A little pancake. I'm going to have it. I'm going to give half to my son. I'm going to eat half of it. And then we're going to die because of the drought, right? And Elijah says, you're not going to die. Because God will take care of you. Ooh, that sounds like good, right? Single-minded, right? God will take care of you. God will protect you. God will help you to live. Well, that's not quite all he says, because he also says this. Go and make something for me first, and then you go. And then if you do that, God will take care of you. Complicated figure. At the end of that, what do you know? She actually does what he says. She goes and makes the little pancake for him first. Then she goes back, and what do you know? There's enough to make another pancake, and another pancake, and another pancake. And what do you know? Suddenly this miraculous flour and oil multiplies. Because she made something for him first. That's where we stopped. Now then, we're going to pick up where we left off. And let's just read this second little story of the woman and her son. After this, the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, he became ill. And his illness became very severe. And finally, it became the case that he stopped breathing, that there wasn't any more breath left in him. The way, and again, I've tried to translate, and again, I normally just take the New Revised Standard Version, which is what we hear in church, and I usually just reproduce it. This particular thing, I've actually translated this myself, because when you read it in Hebrew, there's like three or four stages It's not just sort of he got sick and he died. He gets ill. And then his illness turns rather severe. And then it gets to be the case that he stops breathing. You see, it's a process. It's a long process. And there's, you know, Elijah eating all the pancakes, right, along with her, and the kid gets sick. And you know what Elijah does? And the illness starts becoming rather severe. And you know what Elijah does? Until finally it gets to a very serious point. And you know what Elijah does? Until finally the kid dies. And you know what Elijah's done? Eaten pancakes. And therefore, it's a funny thing is that, again, we talked a little bit last time about signs and wonders, that these prophets, sometimes, some of them, have the ability to do not just miracles, not just solving things, but signs. They're able to do things that point, people toward single-minded devotion to God, right? They're able to do that, right? This is what Jesus does throughout the book of John, right? He does things and it's like causes people, oh, that's what it's about, right? They're able to do these things. The problem with, it seems to me, the problem with signs, the problem with miracles is that everything starts becoming a sign, right? Every occurrence, oh, what does that mean? Oh, what does that mean? Oh, well, maybe that means something, right? And so suddenly we have this kid who slowly, slowly declines until finally he dies. And there's the prophet, there is Elijah. And what has he done about the situation? Nothing. It seems to me, maybe not rightly so, but understandably so, the mother is upset. And the mother is upset not just about the injustice of the world or the reason why children die or because of, I mean, this is a guy who can cause a drought. This is a guy who can cause unending flour and oil to appear. This is a guy that obviously can do things, and all he's been doing is eating pancakes. And so she's understandably upset, not just about the injustice of the world and not just about the death of children. She's upset at Elijah. And you see what she says. She said to Elijah, what do you have against me, O man of God? You came to me to bring my sin to remembrance. What sin? I don't know. I don't even know if she knows. But obviously something bad has happened. And this bad thing isn't just something bad that has happened. This obviously is a sign of something. It's obviously not just something bad that has happened. It's a punishment. And obviously, if it's a punishment, there must be a cause for the punishment. Therefore, there must be a sin. You see, everything gets cast theologically for her. Why have you have come to me to bring my sin to remembrance? Because obviously I'm being punished. And the NRSV, I think, sort of tones this down because they say cause the death of. This is the normal word for kill. You killed him. You're the one that killed him. Because, of course, you had the ability to not. Right? So we'll see what Elijah has to do or how he treats this. He said to her, give me your son. And you notice that she obeys him. No, she doesn't. She doesn't obey him. He has to take the child. You see that? He took him from her chest, and he carried him up into the upper chamber where he was lodging, and he laid him on his own bed. And he cried out to the Lord, O Lord, my God, have you brought calamity even upon the widow with whom I'm staying by killing her son? It's a funny thing, isn't it? is that Elijah, I mean, this is Elijah, the man of God, the prophet. Does he understand why the child died? He has no idea what God's doing. No idea whatsoever. He's as clueless as anybody else. He asks the question, I know I didn't kill him, but maybe you killed him. Did you kill the kid? And you notice what God answers. Nothing. And so this is what Elijah does. He gets up on the bed. He lays down upon the child. And he gets off. And you know what happens? Nothing. He gets back up on the bed. He lies down. He gets off. And you know what happens? Nothing. He gets back on the bed. He's just floundering. I mean, this is not somebody in control. Clearly. He gets back on the bed. He lies on the child again. He gets off the bed. And what happens? Nothing. Finally, notice what he does. Oh, yeah, he's the prophet. He's the one that proclaims God's word. He's the one that does signs and wonders in order to bring people back to the single-minded devotion to God. That's what he's supposed to be doing. But notice what he finally does. He prays. Oh my gosh, I'm getting teary-eyed just thinking about it, right? All he does is just ask what he asks God graciously to do something. No oracles, no proclamation of power. Oh Lord, my God, let this child's life come into him again. The guy who, up to this point, mostly, I think this is true. Up to this point, he's the one that's always been doing things. God has never done anything except talk to him. But as far as doing things, God hasn't really been doing things. It's Elijah that's been doing things. And you notice what happens. The Lord listened to the voice of Elijah, and the life of the child came into him again, and he revived. This is a sign. Yes? This is a sign. This is a great way for him to encourage the woman into a single-minded devotion to God. This is a great sign. Remember the Gospel of John, Lazarus, remember? Jesus does very similar, I mean, he doesn't lie on top of Lazarus, you know, it'd be kind of gross. But again, he does the same thing, and you notice what happens there. I mean, very similar type of thing, right? Elijah took the child, brought him down from the upper chamber into the house, gave him to his mother, and Elijah said, look, he's alive. Is that it? That's all you got to say? I mean, it's true. I'm not saying it's a lie. It's clearly true. But nothing about how God gives life, nothing about how God provides, nothing about how God is able to raise up, nothing about how God... nothing about God at all, actually. All the mother has seen is the child decline, die. The man of God, take the child away. The man of God, come back with a live child. Huh. I wonder what might have happened in that room. I don't know, but I know that Elijah probably had something to do with it. What do you know? Yet again, Elijah is the one in the spotlight. Nothing about God. Nothing about Yahweh. Nothing about Deuteronomy. Look, your child's alive. And so the woman in this process, her eyes, were her eyes fixed? Her eyes are not fixed on God. Her eyes are fixed on Elijah. So the woman said to Elijah, "Now I know that you're a man of God. The flour and the oil didn't give you an indication, right? Now I know that you're a man of God and that the word of the Lord in your mouth is true." But it's not about her relationship with God. It's not about her devotion with God. It's not about anything having to do with her or God. It's about her relationship with Elijah. Now I know that you are Oz, the great and terrible. Right? Now I know that you're the one that has the power. Yet again, I come to the end of the story thinking, what a schmuck, right? I think, oh my God, this guy. The next story, and again, it's a longish story, but we're going to read through it. And again, I'm going to try to pick up the feet and put the feet down. We'll read through it. But I can tell you that you chose a wonderful day to come to Sunday school. You did. Not like all those other days, but today you chose a wonderful day to come to Sunday school. And the reason why is that in the next story, my opinion, in the next story, Elijah steps up. What you're going to be seeing in this next story, it's going to start off some kind of rocky, all right? It's going to start off kind of uneven and kind of rocky. But the way in which the story actually goes, if this story were all we had about Elijah, I'd want a picture of him beside my bed, right? This is going to be a great story. So let's take a look at it. Again, it's going to start off a little rocky. And I can tell you that when the lectionary, actually this story appears in the lectionary, when this story appears in the lectionary, they're going to cut out certain sections of it because those certain sections are kind of rocky. But we're going to read them because, well, this is Roy Heller's class. So here we go. After many days, the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year of the drought, saying, "Go, present yourself to Ahab," who's the king, right? The king who's married Jezebel, and Jezebel has brought in all the types of worship of Baal and Asherah and all of this foreign. So go, present yourself to Ahab. I will send rain on the earth. Remember when Elijah had not predicted the rain, had actually by oath caused the drought. Elijah was the one who was going to end the drought, except by my word. 3 years, shmi years, right? God says, I'm going to send rain. I'm going to start taking control of this situation. Go present yourself to Ahab. I'm going to send rain on the earth. And so Elijah went to present himself to Ahab. He does what he's supposed to do. The famine was severe in Samaria. Ahab summoned Obadiah. It's not the same Obadiah. There's a biblical book, Obadiah, that's somebody else. But here's somebody else. Ahab summoned Obadiah, who was in charge of the palace. So here we have Ahab. Okay, stop reading. Look up here. All right. And again, this is a little bit of the unevenness of the story. And when I say unevenness, I'm not talking about how it's sloppily written or something. I'm just talking about it's very artful. It's very complex in a way. All right, we've got Ahab. Is Ahab a good character or a bad character? Oh, bad, absolutely, right? Again, I understand your hesitancy because you've probably been in my class more than once. But no, he's a bad character, right? So Obadiah is over the household of Ahab, right? Is he going to be a good character or a bad character? Bad character. Yeah, that's what you're expecting, right? Okay. Some of you read ahead. So Ahab summons Obadiah, who is in charge of the palace, and Obadiah revered the Lord. He feared the Lord. He was single-mindedly devoted to God, right? This is exactly how we need to be, right? Obadiah revered the Lord greatly. In fact, when Jezebel was killing off the prophets of the Lord, Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them 50 to a cave and provided them with bread and water. And Ahab said to Obadiah, "Go throughout the land to all the springs of water and to all the gullies. Maybe we can find some grass to keep horses and mules alive and not lose some of the animals." And so they divided the land between them to pass through it. Ahab went in one direction by himself, and Obadiah went in another direction by himself. This is a great book. I love this book so much because I wrote it. there's just talking about Obadiah, I guess. Hold on just a second, because I can't say it better than I did here. Wherever I said it. Oh, here we go. Yep. In light of the previous episodes focusing on Elijah, Obadiah's actions here are remarkable. Whereas Elijah fled the country, Obadiah remained in the country. Whereas Yahweh commands Elijah to hide in a wadi, Obadiah himself takes the initiative and hides prophets in a cave. Whereas God commands ravens and a widow to sustain, kalkal in Hebrew, to sustain Elijah, Obadiah himself takes the initiative and sustains 100 prophets of Yahweh. Whereas Yahweh provides bread and water to Elijah through the widow, Obadiah provides the same to 100 prophets. Whereas Elijah has merely been the recipients of God's provisions, Obadiah has actually provided. His devotion is not merely in word, but also in deed. Again, he's a really positive character. As Obadiah was on the way, Elijah met him. And Obadiah recognized him, and he fell on his face, and he says, "Oh my God, is it you, my Lord Elijah?" And he answered, "It is I. Go and tell your Lord," that is Ahab, "that Elijah is here." Lord! The more and more I read the Elijah stories, the more he strikes me as Liberace, right? It's like, yeah, there he is with his sequined whatever. But anyway, that Elijah is here. And then notice what Obadiah does. Obadiah doesn't go to Ahab and say, "Oh, Elijah's there," which is what we've expected, right? Up to this point, people have obeyed rather quickly. Not Obadiah. Even in spite of the fact that he is single-mindedly devoted, which probably tells you a lot about his relationship with Elijah, he's single-mindedly devoted to Yahweh, to God. When Elijah tells him to do something, Obadiah has a little speech. And I can go ahead and tell you that this speech is the longest speech that occurs anywhere in the Elijah stories or the Elisha stories. This is a speech that goes, and you'll be able, and when we read it through, you'll be able to tell this, okay, I got it, right? But he's going to go on and on and on. He said, "How have I sinned that you would hand your servant, that is me, over to Ahab to kill me?" It's kind of funny is that whenever you're in, I guess it's whenever you're in Elijah's presence, it's like, "Oh my God, why do you hate me?" Right? Because that's what the mother said, right? "How have I sinned," right? "As the Lord your God lives, there is no nation or kingdom to which my Lord," that is Ahab, "has not sent to seek you. And when they would say, 'Oh, he's not here,' he would require an oath of that kingdom or nation that they had not found you. But now you say, 'Oh, you go and tell your Lord that Elijah's here.' As soon as I've gone from you, the Spirit of the Lord is going to carry you to I don't know where. And so when I come and I tell Ahab and he can't find you, he's going to kill me, even though your servant has revered the Lord from my youth. Has it not been told my Lord what I did when Jezebel killed the prophets of the Lord? How I hid 100 of the Lord's prophets, 50 to a cave, and provided them with bread and water? And yet now you say, 'Go and tell your Lord Elijah's here.' He's going to kill me." I get the sense that Obadiah doesn't quite trust Elijah. Call me crazy, but I don't get the sense that their relationship is particularly good. I know the narrator has told me what the character of Obadiah is. And that character does not quite trust Elijah. who knows what you're going to do, right? He's kind of off the wall. And Elijah said, as the Lord of hosts lives before whom I stand. Again, he provides an oath. Remember, we were talking about oaths, swearing a little bit last week, and that is that the only time that you swear as in to pronounce an oath is whenever there you strongly suspect that the hearer doesn't quite trust you. No, what I just said is actually true. No, really, I mean, what I just, you know, so I have, if I get the sense that you're not quite trusting me, then I sort of ramp it up to an oath, right? Jesus actually talks about oaths in the reading this morning. You remember that? Don't swear at all, because people should be able to trust you just by saying whatever it is you... Anyway, Elijah has to pronounce an oath. I will surely show myself to him today. And so Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. Just a tiny little preface to what we're going to read now, because now starts the good story. There's going to be two groups of people that are the prophets of Baal. Oh, just one thing. Say the name Baal. Say that.
Baal.
Say Baal.
Baal.
Yeah, it's B-A-A-L, right? So it's Baal. Beautiful, excellent. So the two A's are two A's, right? It's two sounds, right? So it's Baal.
Baal.
Right, it's not Baal, okay? It's Baal. It's like a bale is a cube of hay, right? So that's a bale. So it's Baal. There are prophets of Baal, and there are prophets of Asherah, who's the goddess. So it's a foreign god and a foreign goddess. Except for those characters, everybody else in the story worships Yahweh. Everybody else worships God. I mean, the God of Israel. Everybody else. The question in the story that's coming up is not, whom do you serve? The question is not, and this is actually really important, because it goes all the way back to Deuteronomy. The question is not, whom do you serve? Do you serve Baal or do you serve God? That's not the question. Everybody worships God. The vast majority of the people worship God and Baal. And in fact, there's no problem with doing that, right? According to Deuteronomy, there's a problem with that. Because however it is that we should have a relationship with God, it should be focused. Complete, total devotion. Loving devotion to God and God alone. The question is not whom you're going to serve. The question is, are you going to serve God exclusively, devotedly, lovingly? That's the question. So just keep that in mind. Because they don't think they need to make a choice. They think it's a smorgasbord, right? They think you can choose a little mashed potato and a little veal cutlet and a little fried chicken, right? You can just go and you can have it all, right? But what Elijah is going to do carefully, rhetorically, beautifully, is that he's going to turn Israel back to a single-minded, loving devotion to God. And he's going to do it in brilliant ways. So, anyway. When Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, "Is it you, you troubler of Israel?" And he answered, "Absolutely, I'm the one that's in charge. I'm the one that has caused this rout. I'm the one that has caused you lots of problems. I'm the one that sent you out with Obadiah trying to find a little grass for your horses. Absolutely, I..." No, he doesn't say that. You see, because what he says is going to cause Ahab to have to make a choice. Because what he says, I haven't troubled Israel. You're the one that's troubled Israel. Your father's house is the one that's troubled Israel because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and you followed the Baals. Now, therefore, have all Israel assemble. You see, the question isn't... You see, there is a question. I'll put it that way. And you've got to choose. And the choice is, who's the one that's actually caused the problem? Is it Elijah? Or is it Ahab? And you've got to choose. But you notice how just how subtle that is. It's not explicit. But Elijah sets it up in an either-or situation. Now therefore have all Israel assemble. This is Elijah talking. Now therefore have all Israel assemble for me at Mount Carmel, who's this really high mountain in northern Israel, with the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah. So 850 prophets, right? Those who eat at Jezebel's table. She takes care of them. And so Ahab sent to all the Israelites and assembled the prophets. He actually does what Elijah says. There is a common, again, you read commentaries on this, there is a common characterization of Ahab as an evil character. I don't think so. I think he's weak. I think he's wishy-washy. I think he's kind of ignorant. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Stupid is a bad thing, right? But ignorant, you just don't know, right? I think he's weak. But he actually does what Elijah says. Elijah came near to all the people, that is all of Israel, and he said, how long will you go limping with two... And I didn't change this. How long will you go limping with two... different opinions, and the Hebrew does not say that, and I didn't change it here. It's almost as if he's characterizing them as limping, right? So they've got a sore leg or something, he's limping. And the problem is that you've got two, the word different opinions, it doesn't actually say that, it says sticks. How long will you go limping with two sticks? And what I think that's about is crutches, right? Or canes. Right? And we know, everybody in this room knows this because we live in the United States, and that is more is better, right? If you got more stuff, then that's better, right? The image that he's using here is that you're sort of have a weak leg, but what the problem is that instead of just having one crutch that you can walk with, you're trying to walk with two crutches. Which, because you have two different crutches, it actually causes you to walk worse than better. Why do you keep limping around trying to use two crutches when you only need one? If the Lord is God, then follow him. If Baal, then follow him. And you notice what the people say. The people don't answer him. Well, of course they don't answer him, because why do we need to choose? They're both great guys, right? They don't answer because they're still in this place where you don't need to choose. Then Elijah said to the people, I'm the only one. I'm the one that's left as a prophet to the Lord. Is that true? No, it's right, because Obadiah has been protecting 100 of them. Remember that? So there are 100 of them in the country. But in this particular scene, it seems to me, what he's going to be doing is that he's going to be setting up a difference. I'm the only one here that represents not Yahweh. I'm the only one here that represents God single-mindedly. The prophets, number 450. So here, let's do this. Let two bulls be given to us. Let them choose one bull for themselves and cut it in pieces and lay it on the wood and put no fire to it. And I'll prepare the other bull. I'll lay it on the wood, put no fire to it. And then you call on the name of your God. Again, for me at least, it's brilliant. He talks about the prophets. He's talking to Israel. He says, let them, let them, let them. And then you call in the name of your God. You notice how he changes? It's not the prophets that are going to be calling on the name. You call in the name of... He automatically associates Israel with those prophets. Now they've got a choice. Do I want to be associated with them or not associated with them? You call in the name of your God, and I'll call in the name of the Lord, and the God who answers by fire, that's the right God. So now we got a choice. And the people say, that's great. Again, how did they? Well spoken. Oh my God, that's so weak. No, this is good. This is good. We get to choose, right? Then Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, you choose for yourself one bull. You prepare it first, because of course you're many. You call, because of course more is better. You're many. You call in the name of your God. Don't put any fire to it. And so they took the bull that was given to them. You notice what just happened? The bull that you choose, and then it was the bull that was given. You see, because when my children were very small, we even joke about this now, when my children were very small and it was cold outside, this is what we would say to Noah. Do you want to wear the red jacket or the blue jacket? It doesn't really matter, as long as you wear a jacket. We don't say, do you want to wear a jacket, right? You see what Elijah's done is that he's given them a choice, but they don't really have a choice. They just take the bull that's given to them. Choose for yourself one bull, prepare it. They took the bull that was given to them, prepared it, call on the name of Baal from morning until noon, crying, oh, Baal, answer us. But there wasn't any voice. No, there wasn't any answer, right? They limped around the altar. It's kind of funny, is that they themselves are limping. They limped around the altar that they had made. At noon, Elijah mocked them, saying, oh, y'all, you need to cry louder, right? He's a god, right? Maybe he's busy with something. Maybe he's wandered away. Maybe he's on a journey. Maybe he's asleep. I don't know. Cry louder. And so they cried louder, right? As was their custom. And then they started cutting themselves with swords and lances until the blood gushed out all over them. Midday passed. They raved on until it was evening, right? And there was no voice. There was no answer. No one was even paying attention. I love that last line because we had the no voice, no answer before. But now there's no voice. There's no answer. And in fact, no one's even paying attention. And I think that that's a beautiful line because it's not just Baal that's not paying attention. It's Israel that's not paying attention. Whatever, 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 whatever. Blah, blah, blah. Right? They're bored with it. Then Elijah said to the people, come here. And all the people came closer to him. Notice he says it. They do it. He repairs the altar of the Lord that had been torn down. Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of tribes of the sons of Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord came, saying, Israel will be your name. And with those stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord. How many altars are there? One. It's a lot of stones, but there's only one altar. And then with the stones, then he made a trench around the altar large enough to hold 2 measures of seed. And next he put the wood in order. He cut the bull in pieces. He laid it on the wood. And then he said, fill 4 jars with water and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood. He said, do it a second time. And they did a second time. He said, do it a third time. And they did it a third time. So that all the water ran around the altar and filled the trench with water. So there's 12 jars of water. No, there's not. Not anymore. Now there's just one bit of water. See, he's taking all of these separate things and consolidating them. He's taking all these separate things and consolidating them. He's using, every time he does something, it's solidifying that single-mindedness. At the time of the offering of the oblation, the prophet Elijah came near and said, oh God, the prophet Elijah came near and said, O Lord, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you're God in Israel. I'm your servant, and I've done all these things at your bidding. So answer me, O Lord, answer me, so this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have already turned their hearts back. You see, he set up it in such a way that they're all ready. They've already made the decision for God. It's so beautiful. You just notice that where he is the best, I'll just put it that way, the best. It's not where he does little magic tricks about flour or oil, or even little magic tricks of raising children from the dead. Just as in that previous story, where he is at his best is simply when he prays. Simply when he prays. And then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering, the wood, the stones, the dust, and even licked up the water that was in the trench. The whole thing is over. The whole thing is over in a verse. The whole thing is over in one sentence. Because you see, the miracle isn't the point. The point is how now the people are single-mindedly. And you see what they do. When all the people saw it, they saw this sign, they fell on their faces, and they said, it's God. God's the one. Suddenly now everything is lined up. Everything is working. Everything is exactly the way in which Deuteronomy sees it working. And Elijah said to them, seize the prophets of Baal. Don't let them escape. They seized them. Elijah brought them down to the Wadi Kishon and killed them there. Okay, we're Episcopalians. We don't like that verse. But anyway, I don't want to talk about it. So anyway, Elijah said to Ahab, get up, eat and drink, because there's a sound of rushing rain. And so Ahab went up to eat and drink. Elijah went up on the top of Mount Carmel and he bowed himself down. So again, prayer. Bowed himself down upon the earth, put his face between his knees, and he said to his servant, go and look toward the sea. And so the servant went up and said, I don't see anything. He said, go up seven times. So I guess the kid has to go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Seventh time. The seventh time, he said, oh my gosh, there's a little cloud. NRSV has no bigger than, but I think it's a cloud like a person's hand. In other words, it's not the size of the cloud that's important. It's like it's a hand. And it's a hand that's in the sea. And it's a hand that is being brought up. And it's a hand that is going to pour out the contents of the sea on the land. There's a little cloud like a person's hand, and it's rising out of the sea. And then Elijah says, go say to Ahab, you harness your chariot, and you go down before the rain stops you. And in a little while, the heavens grew black with clouds and wind, and there was a heavy rain. And Ahab rode off and went to Jezreel, the capital. And the hand of the Lord was on Elijah. And notice what he does. He girds up his loins, he pulls his robes up, and he runs in front of Ahab, almost like his messenger, all the way to Jezreel. Just really quick. The final scene is one of hope and relief. It seems as if everything has turned around. Through the verbal skill of the prophet like Moses, Elijah has been able, by signs and symbols and rhetorical ability, to unify Israel, to turn their devotion to Yahweh alone, and in single-mindedness to rid the country of those voices that would cause Israel to divide their loyalty between Yahweh and anything or anyone else. The nation is brought together. The king has begun to conform to the role of the model Israelite who obeys the Torah. The judgment has passed, the drought is over, and Elijah, no longer concerned about his own status and about his power alone, he's able to serve both the people and the king as a messenger, bringing the good news of the favor of God. Oh, there's another sentence. Unfortunately, this unambiguous, hopeful vision will not last very long at all. So anyway, see you next week. So.